In today's episode, your host, Anka Platon-Trifan, and her featured guest, Danny Stefanik, demystify the exciting world of AI, metaverse, and virtual reality in event planning, exploring how these technologies are reshaping the way we create and experience events. Today's guest goes behind the scenes to reveal the secrets behind engaging virtual events through gamification, navigate the challenges and opportunities within the metaverse, and emphasize the critical role of wellness in digital environments. This fascinating conversation demystifies how AI and virtual reality not only enhance event immersion, but also open new avenues for participant interaction and well-being. This episode is a must-listen for anyone keen to discover the future of events, a blend of technology, creativity, and a deep commitment to attendee health. Tune in now to learn how we're transforming the event landscape and making every experience more engaging and meaningful. Enjoy.
Welcome to Events Demystified Podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks, and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by TreeFan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Events Demystified Podcast. I'm your host, Anka Platon-Trifan, and today we are going to demystify a topic which I haven't really gone into for a little while because virtual events, digital events, online events have sort of like not been the focus with all the AI happening lately, but I'm excited to dive into that. And what's curious about this topic is that it's not just about this awesome integration between AI and VR, it's more than that. But before I get there, excuse my voice. I'm actually still recovering from an awful cold after South by Southwest, which sort of sent me into a week of not fun, bedridden, not fun. Also, that meant I missed my bodybuilding show in Vegas this weekend. That was a low, which we're going to talk about at another time, because today what I want to focus on is on how the world of events is changing and how fast it's changing. And we're here to figure out what that all means for all of us. And to demystify all of that, I have a perfect guest, and that is Danny Stefanik. He is big in the world of VR. He's been in the game for a long time, way before most of us even started playing attention to what VR could be. Danny Stefanik is the CEO and founder of Hyperspace Metaverse Platform. He is renowned for creating the world's first metaverse and is considered a pioneer in the metaverse for business field. Having been involved in this field, in the creation of groundbreaking 3D businesses for over 30 years, he's also the founder of the world's first spatial AI learning experience platform, LearnBright, MoodUp, the 3D Metaverse virtual event platform, and the founder of 3D internet companies, Axie Reality, the world's first 3D web metaverse, which I just learned about. And I was curious how that was different from Second Life, but we're going to dive into that later. So today, the cool part about today's conversation is that Dan is going to help us understand how AI is changing the game for event planning and how virtual events aren't just a click and watch thing anymore, which we kind of sort of got tired of anyway. So he's going to tell us how they can become more interactive, engaging, and there's a lot more fun to be had if we can look at it from this lens. So whether you're planning events or you're just interested in the latest tech and what else is out there, or maybe just curious about what the future holds, I hope that you're going to stay with us and you're going to want to hear what Danny has to say. So buckle in, because we're ready to get started on this adventure. Well, Danny, it's so wonderful to have you with us all the way from Spain, I hear.
Yep, Spain today. And thank you so much for having me. It's quite exciting to be talking.
Well, to kick things off, Danny, I love a good story. Everybody loves a good story. So let's start by maybe sharing a memorable moment from your pioneering journey in the virtual reality that maybe took you by surprise. Anything fun that is worth sharing, I suppose, as an icebreaker?
Yeah, well, you know, I've got so many stories over the years, but I think I was just talking yesterday to one of my colleagues about how I got started in the whole industry. And, you know, I was very much interested in virtual reality, even while I was still at university. And that was back in the 90s. So sounding a bit old.
You're dating yourself.
Yeah, I am. But one of the things that really got me started was an associate of mine was, and this is way back, early days. And he told me that he was building screensavers and selling them on the internet, you know, basically to stop monitors from burning out, and that he was making a good business out of that. And I thought that was absolutely terrific. He made a piece of software and he was selling it and he was able to make enough money to live off. I thought it was incredible. So it got me inspired and I decided to start building a software company. In those days was actually pioneering the 360-degree virtual tours you see for real estate nowadays. So I built that technology back in the early 90s. And, you know, I went on the internet, I started, you know, e-commerce and selling it and licensing it. And I actually got a partial exit to a US real estate company as well. And then a few years later, I was talking to my colleague and I said, you know, how's the screensaver business going? And he said, look, I got to tell you, it wasn't making much money and I was too proud to tell you. So I said it was going really well. And I said, what? I based my whole idea of being able to make a success based on what you said. And it really goes to show you, you know, if you really believe in something, if you believe it's possible, you can go out and do it. And so, you know, I'm really glad that he lied to me because, you know, it got me to take the chance, to take the risk. And that set me on a path, which was absolutely incredible. So, yeah, belief is important.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it got you motivated to start something that was somewhat similar but different. And what a difference that made in your career path, right? Because probably you wouldn't be here where you are if that wasn't, you know, one of your steps that you had to take to be on this journey. So, well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Now, to shift our focus a little bit, let's talk about the core issue with traditional online / digital / virtual / I don't know what we call them anymore, events. You've been vocal about the limitations of traditional online events. What is, in your opinion, the biggest problem they face and how does your approach seek to solve that?
Yeah, well, it's pretty obvious. I mean, if you've had, you know, last week of meetings, maybe in Teams or Zoom, and, you know, you start to get a bit bored and a bit fed up with the same old thing. There's a reason for that. You know, there's a thing called Zoom fatigue. And, you know, most people are watching exactly the same thing on screen. So even if you have a meeting with 30 people, they're all watching the same flat screen with the same video that's going on. And when it comes to webinars, again, it's the same. Everyone's watching exactly the same thing. And there's very little difference between watching the live event and the recording, except for maybe writing some comments in the, you know, chat on the right-hand side. So the thing that's really missing is audience being present. It's all of virtual technology for presentations and meetings is absolutely wonderful for presenters. I think the presenters now have absolute all the technology they need to do things really well. But the audience is kind of invisible and left behind. And that's why we gravitate to, you know, real-world events where we get to meet people, we get to have meetings, not just scheduled meetings, but we meet in the hallways, you know, we run into each other, we get to know people, we build relationships, and these things are really valuable. And that's what's kind of missing in the online events space. You know, we generally see this video broadcast, and if you're lucky, I call them 2.5D events instead of 3D, which is where you have a picture of a room, and you're basically, you know, it's a picture of a theater, and you see the video playing in the picture of the theater. Maybe you go later on to some chat for some networking. But it's, you know, when you start moving into the 3D or spatial or virtual reality space, that's when things change because everybody has an identity and has a presence. And that changes the dynamic completely.
So for someone that's not as technically savvy, it feels like the adoption rate for those type of fully immersive digital events, it's a little tough, right? It's a little hard. I'm curious what type of experience you've had with those fully immersive events in hyperspace, and do they need high-end VR headsets, or are there any more accessible options? I just came from Saobai and everything is about VR, XR, MR. Everything is like something reality, right? Like extra reality. And it was funny at times actually being in one of those XR exhibits. It's to see everyone on VR sets in their own little world, like doing things. I mean, from the outside world looking in, it was comical, like really comical, because everybody was engaging with the tech in their own little space. And I just don't see that being something that we would adopt on mass scale at events, in-person events, as much as I would hope that there is some opportunity for it.
Yeah, I think you've hit the key point to all of this, which is actually, you know, the devices that we see and we hear about, which is the latest, you know, Apple Vision Pro headset or Meta headsets, and these technical devices are very exciting, and they're fully immersive. So you can jump in and feel like you're in an experience that's life-size around you. But the major thing to recognize is we're now at a pivotal point with the internet that's akin to where video became prevalent on the internet. So when video suddenly became standardized and everyone could use it for any application, video just exploded on the web. But 3D is now at the same point. All the browsers, web browsers on every device support 3D content. When I mean 3D, I mean three-dimensional spaces that you can walk around with an avatar or even with video. And what this means is I can deploy an experience. And the key here is agency over the experience versus immersion. So virtual reality headsets and AR headsets allow you to be immersed. But what we really want is to bring 100% of the audience into these experiences. And the question is, how do you do that? And the answer is that it's not about being immersive, but about having a three-dimensional space to navigate in. And that can be experienced on every device. So if you actually have a platform that can reach people on mobile phones, on tablets, laptops, Chromebook computers, and all the VR and AR headsets, and it's up to the user to choose what device they want to use to get into the experience, then you've covered absolutely all the audience. And that's where having a platform that is VR capable, but not requiring VR, not what I call VR only. In my talks, I talk about that being the virtual reality chasm, right? That this is this people go and build virtual reality only experiences, and you have to jump over that to get to that audience, and the audience is small. Eventually, it'll get bigger. But if you can deliver the same experience on every device, you're going to have audience be able to reach it. And the key point of these experiences is that each person has their own journey. So I can go into the world, I can explore, I can meet different people. From my perspective, I'm having my own experience and journey, which is what we have in the real world. And so everybody's experience is unique. Everything is memorable, unique memories for that person. So there's a lot more anchors in the experience that they take away afterwards. So that's probably the most important thing, this ability for everyone to join no matter what, using traditional web browsers. So it doesn't matter if you're in, you know, an enterprise or you're in education or government, you can join into these experiences with what you have right now and not need to deploy something else. And of course, if you want to try out the fully immersive experience, it's available to you, so you can give that a go as well.
So personalization, I hear that's key, but also accessibility is key to widespread adoption. And it's fascinating to see and also learn more about how you're addressing that. Now, let's turn the corner a little bit and discuss, you know, how gamification, especially in virtual events, is becoming an increasingly important topic. And it has transformed engagement in many sectors. How are you integrating it into events to create more dynamic and interactive experiences?
Yeah, I'd say nowadays for virtual events, it's table stakes. It's basic. You have to have gamification or you're not going to have engagement. You still have to have good presenters and you still have to have great content that you're bringing into the experience. But if you're not wrapping gamification around that to drive activation by users or excite them, then you know, you're missing out on delighting an audience, and that's really important. So gamification can be simple things like, you know, a scavenger hunt where you go and collect things. Let's say you have an exhibition hall with 20 booths, and maybe if you visit each booth, you get collect something, and ultimately you get some points, or you get some merchandise. You know, most of our events, we have virtual t-shirts or hats or other items you win for your avatar by doing certain tasks. And then other you get kind of kudos from other people in the, like, where'd you get that, you know, amazing hat, or, you know, that wizard's, you know, wand or whatever. You know, those are the things that you can collect as you go around. And certain people love things like leaderboards, you know, friendly competition, and seeing if they're excelling in engagement. And really, you can start to offer points and rewards for anything, you know, for shaking hands, for stepping into a booth, for filling out a contact form. All those things can drive points and rewards. And, you know, that just keeps people excited. And that a lot of them don't have to be in front of you. They can just be discoverable. So as you go around, you know, new things appear for you, and it becomes a journey, again, a unique journey for each person.
Have you seen anything of that matter that was done really, really well, say in one of the spaces that you've created, and something that was done more like, sort of like, what were they thinking?
Well, and thinking back, actually, I remember we did one for a major burger chain in the US, and that was where you could actually ride a mechanical bull as a prize. That was pretty exciting. I think the ones where it's not so exciting is when you're just asking people to fill out a contact form and give them some points. I think that's probably the most boring thing that you can do. So, yeah, we have in our platforms, we have chatbots and AI characters that can talk to you and engage you in conversation. We often put little kind of Easter eggs in those as well, so people can win things as they, you know, go and talk and learn.
So referencing sort of like an in-person version of that at South By, there's a lot of activations that happened all around the city. So you literally had to walk miles upon miles just to go from one to the next. But one of those was the Delta Lounge, was wonderfully done by a friend of mine, Cindy, with Velvet Events. And it was packed. And we tried to get this one unique Delta hat that they were giving away if you were, you know, doing a few different checkpoints and doing almost like the scavenger hunt yourself. And it was so disappointing to do all of that. And then they ran out of hats. And then you're like, there's no more hats. It's like all this effort and all this, you know, it was scavenging for nothing. That's the reality of some of those in-person gamification efforts. You run out of stuff. Now, that's not the case in a lot of the virtual experiences, because unless it's something tangible, most likely you're not going to run out of things, right? So I suppose the upside of an in-person game is don't run out of stuff, because I mean, try to do it online or something. But that was kind of like a recent experience. You were like, what? Like, where are the hats?
Yeah, would have been good to know. But I think you have right. Two choices. You can definitely do both. So in the digital world, it's so easy to make duplicates of things, so it doesn't matter. You can have unlimited versions. But then there is value in artificial scarcity. So artificial scarcity is used through games and other virtual worlds. In the NFT space, it's used a lot. But even, you know, older games like Second Life, you know, have land, and they limited land kind of growth, and you would have neighbors, and, you know, basically property became an artificial scarcity, and you'd have to pay for property. But really, there's no limit. You could have as much land as you want as far as the technicality of it is concerned. But artificial scarcity drives demand and interest, and can make people really, you know, outlay serious money to try and get something that other people can't claim. So I think you have both options. I prefer everyone being a winner in some way. So, you know, in our events, there's always, everyone has the capacity to get rewarded.
I like that. So the closest I can think of Hyperspace Metaverse as a space that is built on 3D is Decentraland. I'm curious, what are the differences? And I remember like playing with it in the beginning and like constantly having to sort of, like you said, you know, gain more land, gain more like property, gain more influence to build things, to be something or be someone. How do you thrive in the metaverse world?
Yeah, I think Decentraland is really interesting, and it's a model that's been repeated and repeated. It's the idea of having one world, and you go and plot your land there, and then you either bring your audience into the experience, or you rely on the fact that there's one world with people walking around in it, and they happen to go past where you are.
Right.
So, you know, if you're an event company and you run something in Decentraland, are all the people that are in Decentraland right now your target market or your target audience? Probably not. You know, maybe they're in there for having some fun, hanging out with friends. You know, maybe they're of no commercial interest to what you're doing, and you might just be a novelty and they'll go check it out.
Right.
So the having that, that's a model for metaverses as single place. We're talking about Roblox and Fortnite and all these other games. You know, they're an ecosystem where there's audience in there. The approach we've taken is
very kind of, and you're the guest, like you kind of are, or almost like how you go to the park, like you want to do an event at the park, but you can like tell people not to come to your event space, which is the park, the common park, which is a common area, right? Like that everybody uses.
And so, yeah, you have that problem of uninvited guests, but you also have less control because the rules of that place or the game is they define it and they own it and they control it. So my vision, which comes from many years ago with the 3D metaverse on the web, is that you should really have, just like you have control over your own website and you have control over your own marketing and who you bring into, let's say, a webinar, you should be able to control that experience end to end. And so our platform is essentially everyone has their own private world and they choose what they want to do, whether it's open to public, whether it's inviting people on their own lists. If they want to, you know, embed it in their website, they can too. So, you know, there are thousands and thousands of hyperspace worlds run by, you know, Fortune 500 and Global 1000 companies that are private, either internal or occasionally external with events. And they can do what they want. So, for example, Heineken, you know, a alcohol beverage company, they, you know, they couldn't go and do that in Roblox or somewhere else because it's not allowed to promote alcohol, for example. But they used our platform to build an experience that was at a music festival, but also on their website and available to be spread out through social media with a link. And there was nothing to download or install, and they had an activation that they were in full control of end to end. And they were, you know, could determine which market they were advertising to. And that freedom really scales things up as far as opportunities are concerned. So those are two models. There's nothing wrong, by the way, going to those centralized worlds if your target market's there. If you're a brand like, I know, Nike or BMW, and you want to do an activation in Roblox or Fortnite where you've got a massive audience there that's going to be exposed to your brand, go do it. But if you want to run an event where you're actively trying to engage particular audiences to bring them along, you know, a sales funnel, then you probably want to do something that's much more in control.
And I think that was sort of like what I was referring to, because there's been quite a few agents trying to sell this idea of have your event in the Decentraland. And I was like, okay, I'm curious about that. I want to learn more about it. I want to actually investigate further and see if that's possible, because I wanted to bring my own clients into this metaverse space, right? And create an experience. But I feel like what you just described is exactly those challenges that I faced, because you're in everybody's land, right? So you're creating your venue from the ground up. You're still on somebody else's property in so many ways, you know? So that felt like the main sort of like turn off. And then, like, you're right. You either bring your audience in or you're at the mercy of who the audience is. And if the two matches, great. But if they don't, most likely you're going to want to have a place where your audience, it's almost like how you want to invite someone to the to this venue that you reserve for your event for that specific whatever day, days or week, right? So having that personalization going even within the choice of location and the type of experiences that you can create versus like what's possible, what's not, the control that you mentioned, right? Like you have control of way more elements versus, well, here's the manual and this is the rule book. You've got to abide by this. and then, you know, everything else is sort of like, well, not really an option. Now, before we move on, we're going to take just a short break to give a shout out to our main sponsors. Their support is instrumental to making this conversation happen. So stay with us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to explore more. I'm curious to go into Axie Reality and the beginnings and the genesis of all of that. Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com. Welcome back, friends. If you're just joining us, we have Danny Stefanik, CEO and founder of the Hyperspace Metaverse Platform, the original Metaverse pioneer. Now, going back to the very beginning, when Axie Reality was launched in 2007 and was designed as a 3D internet company allowing users to view any web page in 3D. One thing that came to mind when I was, you know, doing a little bit of research on this was Second Life, because on the other hand, Second Life was released much, much earlier, I believe in 2003 by Linden Lab, and it was a virtual world where users can create avatars and then interact with each other and create digital content. And both of those platforms, I feel like, emerge at a period of significant interest in this virtual world idea, an online social experiences, but they obviously targeted somewhat different niches within that broader scope of things, and that's broader space. Now, Danny, could you elaborate a little bit more on the foundational principles that guided Axie Reality's development to differentiate itself from Second Life? Specifically, how did Axie Reality intend to enhance the user interaction and engagement across the web rather than within maybe the singular virtual environment? And what implications does this have for the future of virtual and hybrid events?
Yeah, that's a long question with a lot of parts. It's very interesting.
I love three-part questions, just so you know.
There's only three? Oh, well.
I don't know. Let's go with that.
So, you know, I'm a big, you know, fan of what was done with Second Life. I think it was a very interesting project. There was a number of other projects going along at the same time, but Second Life seemed to get most of the press. There was other platforms like There, and there was, you know, earlier platforms like, you know, Active Worlds and things like that. So, you know, my journey was way back in the 90s, starting with the first browsers, Netscape and Internet Explorer, building 3D capabilities for them right back at the very early stages. And there was even a virtual worlds company, which I think deserves more kudos, called Black Sun, which is actually a reference to Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, epic novel about the metaverse, actually, where the metaverse term is being used a lot. So, you know, way back, there's obviously a lot of passionate people about the idea way before Second Life came around. And in fact, Axie Reality,
somehow they became the bigger known player in the space. I'm wondering their PR
was fantastic, actually. They did a really good job, and most people were just enthralled by the whole idea of the internet being a three-dimensional space. And that's nothing new. We were talking about the information superhighway and surfing the web. There was always 3D metaphors for their web experience. People wanted it to come to fruition. So I started Axie Reality back in 2000, actually. It took 7-8 years to get it to launch, but it was built to scale to the entire size of the internet. And its philosophy was slightly different. As I mentioned before, having land is an artificial scarcity. The idea that you can build land and sell it and that you would have a neighbor next to you, and there's limitations. In the web, which is a hyperlinked universe of content, right? You can link to anything and you can have pages with thousands of links to other pages and other websites. And so for me, the multi-dimensional nature of hyperlinking made much more sense than a flat landscape where you couldn't control who your neighbors were. You know, I don't want somebody, a bad actor, buying land next to my property when the website...
If you can control it, right? I mean, that could happen next to you in real life.
Exactly. But on the internet, if you have a web page, you decide who to link to.
Yeah.
And people can link to you, but you don't have to have links back out to them. So that idea to me was really smart and created a hyper-dimensional world that I just saw was a good fit for aligning with the objectives of what people wanted to do with whatever they were presenting. And that really stuck with me as a great metaphor. And that's what hyperspace kind of is today. But with Exit Reality, we took it a step further and built a technology that worked in all the web browsers to look at existing two-dimensional web pages and then with some smart technology, look at them and go, okay, I could reinvent this content of a 2D page as a 3D environment. So it interpreted it into a 3D environment and it could use themes or what we call then 3D style sheets that we defined. So I could say, I want my website to appear as a gallery or as a garden or a world in space. And you could do that. And then all of your content would automatically be put in it. And that just took away the problem of people having to create. It gave them something to start with they could then modify, because most people presented with a blank canvas don't know what to do. But if you see all your content in there and then you can move it around and change it and add to it, it's much easier to do that from a cognitive position. And not only could you build the 3D environments automatically, but the links you had on your pages automatically became doorways to those other sites. So if I link to your website, there's a doorway to it and people could navigate through it and end up in your world, right? And this also enabled you to meet other people on those web pages. So for instance, YouTube was automatically converted into one of the biggest 3D cinemas in the world. You could go into millions of different cinemas, and MySpace, the old social network, you know, their pages
before
were converted
Facebook.
To, yep. Oh, we did Facebook too, but it converted Facebook and MySpace pages into apartments. Mm. So if I went there in 3D and you went to the same profile in 3D, we could see each other there. And so what it did automatically was create communities of common interest. So if I went to a website about, I don't know, luxury cars and you went there as well, we'd run into each other and we happen to have the same interests. So there's more to talk about. There's more, you know, icebreakers there for the ways we would like to talk about this common interests. So that was
I feel like the Facebook of today could definitely use a bit of an upscaling in that direction, because right now it's completely useless.
Well, it's also not meeting the expectations of the younger audiences, right? There's a lot more engagement demanded nowadays, and you know, yeah, attention spans need to be dealt with. So, you know, it really is something that you need very quick engagement, and that's why you need things that can load instantly and run on every device and anything you're using. But yeah, you know, I think it was a real moonshot, Exit Reality, and way too early for the market. Absolutely, way too early. But it was a hell of a ride getting the technology together, which could scale to the entire population of the internet, probably a little over-engineered, you know, to go for that scale, because we didn't reach the same scale. But we did have great clients like Warner Brothers. We were their 3D website. You go to Warner Brothers and dive into a 3D cinema complex and watch previews of all their movies and get virtual goods and even popcorn. So, you know, these things are really fun. And I still think the metaphor has a lot of value. I think that websites have changed from sites to become web applications mostly. So there's a little bit of a change there and a reason why it wouldn't work the same. But the whole idea that people should have their own world and have full control over it like they do their own website, I think is fundamental in creating the metaverse of many virtual worlds. And I think that's inevitable. And now that we have 3D on every device as a media type and we have open standards for it, it's all, you know, upside now. It's just going to be a growing and growing market.
That's very interesting and fascinating to hear more about. And, you know, I'm curious what, you know, that's going to be looking like in the future, not just, you know, in events, but also in our everyday lives and in our engagement with each other in this sort of like mixed reality world, right? So I want to move now from, you know, this digital avatars and the world of the metaverse into the embodiment of interaction through AI, the idea of AI-powered event staff that truly feels like we're stepping into the future in events. This blend of technology not only, I feel like, enhances the event experiences, but it can completely change it. Can you share more about how voice, body language, even, you know, virtual handshakes are redefining what's possible and turning these futuristic concepts into some game changers really in our industry?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing and fantastic to be working with AI technologies. So there's this interesting idea of AI generated content, so images and videos and, you know, maybe even 3D environments. We're at the very early stages of that. But where it really becomes interesting is the virtual agents or these embodied characters that are in the virtual worlds. Now, we've been working with those characters, not driven by today's AI, but driven by simple branching scenarios and those sorts of things for nearly a decade. So we have characters that can react, they can animate, we have thousands of gestures, facial expressions, animations, and the way that they can impact the environment they're in as well. So they can bring up videos or they can teleport you to another location, or, you know, they can really change the environment that you're in or impact the environment you're in, rather than just being a talking, you know, message on the bottom right corner of a web page. It's something that can actually be a part of the environment that you're in and influence it. So, but once you have that and you mix in today's AI technologies, it gets really interesting because we have speech recognition and text-to-speech, so you can have natural language conversations with these AI characters. I can walk into a booth and I can start talking to an AI chatbot that has full knowledge of a particular product and can answer all my questions and stays on topic, which is a really difficult thing to do, but it works. You can do it. And we're even using it in learning and training. So you can go into a training experience where you might learn about safety. And the AI character can not only guide you through a process, but it can also assess how well you're doing and score you on that and, you know, send the scores off to a learning management system or somewhere to be reported. And these things are just absolutely amazing. We even have AI chatbots talking to each other in certain scenarios, role-playing. So they have discussions with each other and you jump in when you want to you know, elaborate on things or make decisions. And these characters, every interaction you have with them can be unique, so you never get bored. And they can answer a whole plethora of questions because you can feed the right information to them. And because they can link to other actions within a platform, that is showing a video or bringing up 3D items or taking you to a different place, we use them to, for example, drive people to fill out a contact form. So at the right moment in the conversation when the person's being fully engaged and they want to know more and you know they want to know more because it's scoring your engagement, that's when it gives you the ability to fill out a contact form and engage with a human agent or book a demo or, you know, take it further. And you can't get a better position than that unless you had a real person in there dealing with everybody. And if you've got thousands of people at an event, you know, how are you going to manage thousands of conversations simultaneously? It's really difficult. But if you have the AI chatbot there that can be having 100 conversations at once, independently, everyone thinks they're having the unique conversation. That's a scale that's just unachievable in any other way.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Now, I'm curious because, you know, just recently, probably you're very much aware how the European Parliament passed the landmark Artificial Intelligence Act, which is basically establishing, I feel like, the world's first most comprehensive set of regulations for AI tech. And it has all kinds of different critical measures and safeguards on general purpose for artificial intelligence, as well as reinforcement, restrictions, and all kinds of things on how companies, especially in the European nations, should engage with AI. And within the event industry, I think there's this increased focus on not just on sustainability, which has been around for a while, but also like social responsibility. How do you see AI and virtual reality contributing to these goals, and how that can not just contribute, but some of the challenges that this new, you know, AI regulation could impact us outside of the European Union?
Yeah, I think there's real positives in having regulations, but there's also real challenges. So the first thing that I recognize is that when regulations are in place, or when ways of improving the quality of a particular technology are in place, you will find that you get much better outcomes. So I see it, you know, especially in the USA and Europe, when it comes to data privacy and security. The organizations we work with are very highly conscious of data privacy and security and protecting people's interests, protecting their organizations from liability as well. And so they take great measures in doing that, and they employ really good processes and procedures and technology and human-centered aspects as well to make sure that it's high quality. And when I sometimes see in, you know, other countries where that's not in place and it's not as considered as important, there's a huge cost to that. So I know one certain, you know, company I can rely on, whereas another company I may not. I'll start to say, oh, look, the reliability is not there. So you increase the risk. So I think with AI regulations, that can come into play, and we can start to see more people contributing to responsible use and showing that, and that will give, commercially, people will gravitate towards the providers they can trust. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're kind of in an arms race for AI. So many countries and many places are working on it with nonstop. And so, you know, you also don't want to hamper your ability to be competitive in the market and let somebody else take complete control with less guardrails. And that's a concern for me. Mm-hmm. And it's also what's driving a lot of commercial decisions for people to just keep going at it and disregarding, you know, the safety component of it, because they know that there are others out there that are not paying attention to that and just going, you know, completely at full burn towards whatever they can do without those guardrails. So it's a challenging time, but I do see, I do hope that the outcome of it is that quality aspect that I'm talking about. The companies you'd rely on to use their AI services, you know, will start to win the majority of the use, but there are, you know, I think there will also be these actors out there that are just pushing the envelope, perhaps a little too fast. I mean, I'm really interested to see the future. I want the future to happen as soon as possible, because I'd like to see what it's like. But I just certainly don't want to bring a negative future closer. But you know, I'm absolutely, as a person fascinated and intrigued by technology, I really can't wait to see how things roll out. But at the same time, I do want people to be cautious and, you know, try to put the you know, responsibility around it, which I think the EU is doing. Sometimes people say they overregulate, and so, you know, that can be an issue too. But I think there's flexibility, and the intention is right.
That's good. That's good to hear. Now, with technology, as you mentioned, you know, as we all know, rapidly evolving, as parting thoughts before we move into our last topic of today's conversation, I'm curious, from your perspective, what are some of the challenges that you anticipate and some of the opportunities as they present themselves in this world of events, in the metaverse world, in the world of virtual / digital / whatever we call them, online events?
Well, I really have a, as far as the technology is concerned, I mean, AI is a total wild card as to what's going to happen. But I think from a technology perspective, I really see us moving beyond 2D video and into 3D video. You're seeing a little bit of it with the Apple Vision Pro and people being scanned in and having their 3D digital twin represented. I think eventually video will come to become the same thing, and traditional video companies will be left behind, and the ones that are innovating 3D replicas and, you know, indistinguishable 3D replicas. And that's what we're going to be using. I think we're going to be using them in day-to-day all the time. We won't be stuck in these 2D little windows. We'll be able to explore and interact with people in far more interesting ways. So breaking the bounds of the box will happen. It's a part hardware and part software thing. And I think the traditional video players really need to get a move on, because somebody is going to jump in the market and, you know, really leapfrog where they're at. So some people will be caught off guard. That's where I think the embodiment of our little video boxes that we have here start to break out, and we'll start to have more interesting experiences. And the fidelity of video in 3D will be the same. Because often we look at 3D and we say, oh, it's not as good as what I see on video, but that's on a convergence. And then all of the things that are possible in all the computer games that you see suddenly become possible with you as your real representation as well. So that's, for me, probably the biggest fundamental shift. And the next thing, obviously, is, and this is, I don't know if it's more of a hope or a inevitability, but the idea of AR glasses that we can wear from a day-to-day basis. You know, I've got virtual reality headsets, I've got a few AR glasses, but something that's as, you know, lightweight and neat as spectacles that you could wear that gives you an overlay of three-dimensional digital information in the real world is going to transform the way we work. I mean, we used to be locked at desks with computers, then we got to mobile, yeah, and we could get around, and that's going to be the biggest display revolution in humanity.
But I think there's also this element of like a new way to relate to each other. Like, imagine you are wearing your AI glasses and you're having a conversation with this person. Is it ethical during the conversation to pull up their LinkedIn profile to see what they're about? Is it ethical to do a Google search on them if you just met them? You know what I mean? Like, there's all these implications of like, what's going to be okay and what's not going to be okay? Or is this the direction we're all going towards? Like, you're literally scanning somebody's entire history just by, you know, having a conversation with them in real life, right?
Yeah, I think that sort of thing sounds pretty inevitable to me. And it's kind of what a number of countries have with cameras on the streets pointing and detecting people's faces and doing those things already. It just becomes more of a consumer access technology rather than a government or, you know, security related technology. I'd have to think a bit more about that, but I like the idea of knowing more about people that I'm talking to and having context. You know, maybe I can skip a lot of the small talk and actually get to things that are important to you because I understand a bit more about you. Maybe that can actually accelerate the use of my lifetime far more. And, you know, we can both get a lot more out of life in a very, much shorter amount of time, allowing us to live more and explore more. So maybe that's a good thing, but I like to see the positives and not to dwell on the negatives so much. So I automatically go and look at the benefits, but I'm sure there's some concerns around privacy, and hopefully we can work on ways that people agree on what should be shared and what shouldn't.
Well, I can definitely tell you, navigating all of those challenges and opportunities will definitely shape the future of our lives and our, you know, events and our industry. But as we innovate, one thing that I want to focus on is keep our well-being in check. And that's something that I'm passionate about. Mental and physical fitness have been something that I've been preaching about on this podcast for a very long time, because we all live this super fast lives, and the demanding nature of technology and business and the event industry as well is pretty high. It's sometimes burnout is the only outcome that we see more often than not. So I want to ask you this before we come to a close here. How do you keep your mental and physical health a priority as we're doing all these things in all those places? You live in different countries, you run large events. How do you put yourself in like a first priority when it comes to your mental and physical fitness?
Yeah, well, there's probably four things I can think of that I'd like to discuss, but I've always had a long interest in extending human lifespan through science. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big fan of longevity. I've been doing research on that for nearly a decade. So, you know, various habits, supplements, pharmaceuticals to extend human lifespan, but also to give you more alertness during a day. I mean, if you've got bad eating and sleeping habits, they can really start to drag you down. But if you're looking after your health, you know, in a very fundamental way, instead of, you know, a lot of people see, you know, aging as just a normal thing that happens, you know, you're looking okay for your age, you're okay for your age, those sorts of things. But the truth is, you know, aging is damage to your body. So you want to reverse that. So that's one thing, you know, that's a, you know, a different part of what I look at. But from, you know, very simple ways of health and fitness, you know, the virtual reality headsets have great games in them for fitness. So I'm a big fan of Beat Saber, which is you put on a headset and you've got, you know, some lightsabers like in Star Wars, and you rock to some music, and there's a lot of exercise. You know, it can really get you quite sweaty, and it's exciting and fun, and there's a lot of rhythm involved. So that's great. And I also, in our platform, we have health and wellness spaces. Mm-hmm. So you can go into spaces with calm music or silent spaces or with white noise, you know, those sorts of frequencies where you can sit there and switch off. And they're used in events as well. So people can actually detach and go to another virtual space. I mean, they could just look away from their laptop, but it takes them somewhere and they get to feel a part of it. Some of them have, you know, guided meditation. Others have yoga experiences that you can follow. And this is great for event participants to have those other experiences on the sidelines from the actual real event, where, as you say, you know, you get a mental fatigue engaging with so many people and taking in so much information. Sometimes you just want to switch off for a little bit. And so those things are possible to do in the 3D environments, especially things like breathing exercises that just get you to follow a rhythm for breathing more slowly and full. And, you know, after 5 minutes of that, you can actually feel completely refreshed. So people don't realize that a good session of breathing in a few minutes, you can really change your mind, your state of mind, and, you know, get back to being productive.
I love that. I love the inclusion of wellness in some of those spaces. I think it's something that I've been working with a friend of mine. He's the host of Return on Wellness, in ways in which we can incorporate more wellness at events. And that's basically the focus of that particular project. And there's so many different ways, like you just mentioned, in real life, in person, but also through, you know, virtual spaces to be able to do that and to just detach a little bit from the hustle and bustle of like a busy agenda. And I, again, coming back, because this was so recent to me, coming back from Sabai, I remember actually constantly walking away from all of those busy spaces towards the river. I needed a break from all the people, from all the noises, from all the overstimulation, all the activations. And I would just like walk for like, you know, 10, 15 minutes by the riverfront. And then when I felt like I'm recentered and I'm ready to take on another set of like overstimulated spaces and lots of people, I was mentally fit for it, you know. Now imagine doing that in retrieving yourself into a little space where you can just quiet down, like over that anxiety, the stimulation of like being surrounded by people all the time. I'm an ambivert. I love to have that extroverted time, but then I spend copious amounts of times alone and I'm perfectly happy with that. And when I'm put myself in spaces where it's constant, like 24/7, like nonstop, that drains me of every creative thought, of every energy drop that's left. And it's not, you know, sustainable. So I'm excited to see more of that in our lives, into our events. That balance, I feel like it's essential to sustain not just innovation, but also personal growth. And like you said, like reverse, hopefully, if possible. If not, at least increase your quality of life if you're not going to reverse aging, you know. So thank you so much, Danny, for having this insightful conversation. I gleaned a lot from all the things that you shared. I'm curious, if our audience wants to learn more about what you're doing and what you're innovating, where can they do that? Where can they connect with you?
Yeah, certainly. Well, you know, if they're interested in talking to me personally about any of the stories that we've discussed here, you know, definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. Just look up Danny Stefanik. But on a commercial basis, if you're interested in what we're doing for virtual events and the metaverse, do check out hyperspace.mv. That's short for metaverse, hyperspace.mv. And that can take you into the world of the metaverse and what it can do for learning, training, events, and digital twins. So, yep, explore and enjoy.
Well, I am super excited to check it out myself. I will make sure that I'll include those links in the episode notes. Thank you again for sharing with us all the things that you had to say about Metaverse and the future of events. All right. So in closing, I want to thank you all for staying all the way till the end. This is a little longer episode, but it's really good. And I hope you stay all the way till the end because there's a lot here. I hope that you not only got informed, but also inspired to explore some of the possibilities of AI and virtual realities and metaverse for events, but also in general. And if you want to learn more about what other options there are in AI and when it comes to learning more about AI tools for either business events, do check out some of the bootcamps and workshops that we have listed on our website as well. And there is a AV production GPT that is, I heard, really good, that has been trained on an extensive data set for AV, AI, with the goal to provide you with that expert advice and solutions to optimize event performance and impact while also ensuring that your budget is used efficiently and you gain attendee engagement. I'm going to have to add some links into the metaverse to the backend to make sure that it learns more about the metaverse technology that we just talked about in this episode. All right, with all of that, this is the end of our conversation. Make sure you follow all of our channels to stay updated with our next episodes, with who are we going to talk to next. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Anka, and I hope that I'll see you next time. Until then, stay curious, stay innovative, and above all, stay connected. We're shaping the future of events together. I'll catch you on our next adventure into the world of event planning and technology. Goodbye for now, and remember, the future is now.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified Podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about TreeFan Event Services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.